Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That was very loud.
Good God. Good. Wake Up Hollywood. That woke me up. Boy. How are you? With my co-host, Josh Ledoux.
Why, hello.
How
hello.
Do you do, Ledoux?
What's going on?
Is that French? I think that is French.
Yeah, I think so.
You're like, I don't know.
I don't even spell it the correct way. I'm supposed to put a big D because yeah. It's French.
Big D. And it's supposed to be a little A, too, right? It's like yeah. Big L, little A, big D.
Exactly.
Why don't you?
I've never done that.
You should be like, excuse me, it's Ledoux.
I Americanized it.
Yeah, you're like Ladoux.
Yeah.
How was your week? How have you been?
Too bad. Not too bad. The Olympics are on.
I know. Have you been watching?
Of course.
Did you hear about that? I think he's a New Zealand martial arts Olympian, and he got robbed. Like somebody dressed in Brazil. They dressed like cops, and they pulled him aside, and then they took him to an ATM, and they made him...
Oh, geez, yeah. I haven't heard that.
And then somebody else, a photographer, he got robbed of like $100,000 in just photography equipment.
Crazy.
I mean, it's just like, dude, it's
well, a couple days before, they were finding like body parts washed up on the beach. They found like a dead guy just outside the... one of the stadiums. I mean,
I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
it's a little messed up. Like Brazil's going through like an economic crisis.
Oh yeah,
but they had enough money to put into a stadium that they'll never use after this.
Right, you know, that's the problem. Crazy. They spent billions of dollars, and like literally outside the stadium, there's like you know slums where people are like sitting on the roofs. They have no food.
I don't get that. Like, I don't mind like you know the Olympics being held in different countries around the world.
No, that's cool.
But
yeah,
I think it should be at a place that at least their economic situation is not in you know dire.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's
needs nuts. Of you know what I mean.
I'm sure the people could have used that billions.
And that's
of
the big complaint. And, yeah. And like a lot of people died making the stadiums and stuff. But let's talk Olympics for a little bit. Who have you? What events have you seen?
For some reason, for hours, I watched the bike race, all the men's bike race.
Who won?
For 85. Who knows?
Wait, you watched the whole thing? And you didn't
who
see
knows
one?
Who won?
Yeah, those. I always wait to like the final. Yeah, like 15 minutes.
I kept going.
NBC's
back,
great about that. They'll be like, "Okay, we're gonna just show you the finish." You
somewhat. Sometimes you're into something, you're watching it like the race, right. And all of a sudden they cut it and go into like interviews
that sucks.
Like you know some foreign girl that.
I heard Michael Phelps won a gold, and he won a silver too. Did he come?
And he
in
won.
Place?
He just won another gold now.
Damn!
So he's got like 20 golds.
Are we winning the gold the medals race?
No, China, I believe.
Damn,
last
China.
I looked, but we're just one behind. We have more total medals.
Well, that counts for something.
Yeah. Did
right?
you see all these red spots on all the like swimmers?
No,
they have circles, red circles all over them.
Why?
Because they're all using this Chinese method where they put the glass suction cups on. And they suck it out so until the blood starts coming out.
Jesus.
And they put these big, round, circular bruises on their body.
I'm going to start doing that for your co-host, Gix. I've been this seeing your political
cool.
posts, too, man.
Too many.
Dude, it's kind of a... It's a circus of a political race.
It's nuts.
Let's be honest.
It's nuts.
Who are you voting for?
I'm not.
You're not voting at all. You're like... You're going to fight the power and say, I'm not going to
I mean, I can assure you I will not vote for Hillary. That's a guarantee.
She's a mess. I mean, but she's less of a mess than Donald Trump. It's lesser to be. Lesser
yeah,
to be.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but he's not great either. I mean,
no, he's horrible. I mean, have you seen that meme where it's like, it has Two-Face, she's Two-Face, and he's the Joker, and it's like, choose. That's pretty much how I look at our political candidates this year.
It's insane.
It's unfortunate. But it's worse outside of the country, too. I mean, there's
a
lot worse.
You know, I heard this quote just recently that I thought was really good, but it's like, things aren't getting worse. the information we get is getting better. So, like, you know, we think it's so bad right now, but a lot of this stuff has been happening for years. We didn't have the internet to just pull things up nonstop.
Makes me want
to
punch myself in the face. You know what I mean?
I mean, the rigging is the biggest thing. And Donald Trump is saying it. It happened on the Republican side. It definitely happened on the Democratic side. I mean,
what do you think about the Donald Trump thing with the Purple Heart? I mean, that's just, that's like a slap in the face to everybody that has a Purple Heart.
I'll be honest, I didn't get what the big deal was.
Well, because you know what it takes to get a Purple Heart. Usually you're wounded and...
Totally, but he made a joke, which I'm not saying it was a good joke. But
it's a terrible joke.
He made a joke, but the guy that gave it to him is there and is voting for Trump and was happy to give it to him, had no problem with what he said.
Right.
And so I don't see the big deal of it.
Obviously, they make it into a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Still, I think it's obnoxious. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people that were injured in battle, they're the ones that are having a problem with it. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't think we even have a right to even comment on it. You know, it's like, I think it's kind of like one of those things, like, if you've been injured in a war, then you should kind of be able to comment on that.
Yeah, situation. I think that's why I'm commenting on it from the man that gave it to him's point of view. He was fine with the whole thing. So, if he wants to give it to that person... And doesn't mind the joke. He's going to vote for Trump.
I could just shoot you in the leg and give you a Purple Heart. You know, it can
no,
happen.
Thank you.
It can happen. We can make it work. So what else is going on in your week?
What's it called? Stranger Things. Have you seen this?
Dude, I just saw episode one.
Fantastic.
I'm in love with it.
Fantastic.
It's like Goonies made Super
totally.
8.
Totally.
I mean, it is awesome.
It's fantastic.
And I saw all the hype online, and it was just like... Wow, this is really that good.
It really is. I watched
Music,
the whole thing.
Even like the logo for the show, I'm just like, oh my God.
And the props.
This is like my childhood.
Yeah,
you know,
all like, the props. Like the walkie-talkies are like, you know, huge, a big antenna.
You know, every time I watch an episode, I'm just like, man, they must have gone on like eBay and just hoarded through like closets of people that had all this stuff.
100%. I mean, there's huge warehouses in LA full of this stuff as well.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for movies. I mean, they go to prop departments and they have 80s section with all the 80s stuff.
Like, I need 400 80s typewriters. Like, well, come
dude, they have everything.
Warehouse number one.
They have everything. I went to like I had to do a space thing before, right? You know, I dressed up in full gear. Went to this place and it was just everywhere Star Wars stuff, Alien stuff. You know, space
outfits.
You're
like, oh my God, there's Star Wars stuff.
It's crazy. They make them all the stuff that was there. They make them right there. You go into the back and like, there's a bunch of like women sewing and prep and all that stuff. It's crazy.
Were you like, can you make me into Yoda?
I was happy to be an astronaut. It was pretty badass.
Dude, it must have been hot though. Come on.
It was freezing out.
Really?
Oh God, yeah. It was so cold that I was thrilled to be in that damn.
How did you not walk up to a girl like just holding your helmet like, so you come around your oven? You know, like
it was weird because I was the only astronaut on the set. It was for Under Armour, and I was like just by myself sitting there in an astronaut outfit. It was pretty cool though.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You miss doing some of that stuff?
Totally.
Just because of the costumes.
Everything. Like, it's so much fun. You get to play make believe like you were a kid.
Yeah.
And get paid to
do it. Get back into it. What are you doing?
I hear you. Someday.
Someday. Well, tomorrow I get the chance to do something pretty cool. I'm singing the national anthem at a Dodgers game.
Oh, I see.
Tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
And I'm pretty excited because I'm not even like the biggest baseball fan, but I do love the Dodgers.
Yep.
But, you know, I've been going to games since I was a kid, and tomorrow I get to like walk on the field.
Yeah,
and,
it's
like,
awesome.
See it without anybody there or like, even just like seeing the players just, you know, batting and doing some batting practice.
It's awesome.
Like, there's going to be like a behind the scenes part that we just get to like witness.
Yeah.
And they gave us killer seats too. It's like,
that's awesome.
So we're all excited, but it was just, all that stuff just came in like today. I was like kind of freaking out. I'm like, are we doing this?
This is the same guys from the Lakers game?
Yeah.
Nice.
We're doing all like the LA sports teams. We're going to do the Kings next. We're
going to
do the Clippers in the fall. And Lakers, I'm glad we're doing the Lakers. Like, we did the Lakers first. That was like, pretty huge.
Yep.
And the Dodgers is also like,
yeah,
Dodger Stadium is so iconic, you know, on so many levels. So it's kind of cool to just do it there just because you don't get that opportunity very often.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And the Clippers are already like, we want you to do a game in the fall. We tried to do a game for the playoffs, but scheduling didn't work. Really, what didn't work is they didn't win enough games to get through. But we're going to do a Clippers game in the fall. And
that's great.
Yeah, man. Been kind of crazy. I got to hang out with Ziggy Marley a couple
times. I seen. That's awesome.
Super nuts.
That's awesome.
I got to hear him sing a song that I wrote in front of 10,000 people. I was like, this is dope.
That's
I sat
amazing.
There. Usually, like, you know me. Like, have you seen shows?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm always the one doing the work, playing the shows. But
yeah.
It was so nice to hear something that you did and see that.
I think like, it has to be weird sitting there and other people are enjoying them song and you probably want to tap each one of them on the shoulder like, hey, I wrote this.
Well, the crazy thing is like we came super late to the fairgrounds and this guy was like, hey, we're not taking tickets anymore. And I'm like, what do you mean you're not taking tickets? He's like, we can't let you in. And I was like, dude, I'm with his management and you know I wrote one of his songs and seriously, it was like straight out of a movie. The guy was like, sure, kid, sure. And I was like, oh my God. You know,
it's Chris Farley.
It was crazy. But they ended up letting us in and we got hooked up with passes and all nice. That. And we
That's
got
awesome.
To hang out with the whole band. It was pretty surreal. I was just like, you're Bob Marley's kid.
It's so crazy.
In my mind, I was just like, hey man, what's going on? You know,
it was awesome. I seen him hold the pot plant in the air.
I saw that. So you're seeing him on Twitter and Instagram and all that.
I think just because you're probably liking stuff.
Okay. But yeah, I saw his Instagram and he was holding a giant pot plant. Like it looked like a Christmas tree.
But the funny thing is, like, why are you carrying that around? Like, why is that on the tour bus?
Well, because probably somebody gave it to him because they're Denver,
you're probably
Colorado,
right. Yeah, you're probably
know?
Right. You're
they're probably
right.
Like, hey, welcome. And he's just like, yes,
that's awesome.
Leave it on the stage, you know. And it was as big as him.
I was
like, that is awesome. Yeah. That was crazy. So, anyways, good times. Good times. Awesome. We cannot. Our special guest has arrived. Mr. Ario Man. Oh, our studio has spoken already.
Applause.
Get a little closer, man. We want to hear you. We want to hear what you say. Yeah, so, Josh, this is one of the most talented musicians that I've come across in Los Angeles. And I don't use those words lightly, but this guy is a beast on guitar. He's also a beast on piano. The guy writes, composes. He's just crazy talented. So
you better live up to all this.
Nah, man,
you gotta live up to all this now.
I'm mostly actually just crazy. Talent, you know, just comes in addition.
He's crazy and he's talented. And you know what the funny thing is? He's like, yeah, music's cool, but I'm way more into surfing. Is that true? A little bit?
Well, they definitely go hand in hand. I don't... the music and the surfing, they feed each other in a way. Let's just say I wouldn't be able to live without either one of them.
Right.
I would become real dark. Real quick.
How often do you go surfing? I don't think I've ever asked you.
I would probably go about an average of 3 times a week.
Oh wow.
But for example, this week I'm not going to be going probably any day. The waves are kind of flat.
That's a grumpy Ario.
It's well, I'm not as grumpy as I used to get because I'm so busy these days and I just I get to work a little harder when there's no waves, but. Yeah, my energy is not as...
centered?
As... it's hard to describe. I'm not as energetic, probably, when I don't surf. When I surf, it doesn't matter what happens during the day.
Right.
It'll be a great day, no matter what. Like, if I get some good waves in the morning, it already sets up the day perfectly for me. And
I wanted to ask you this, too. It's like, when you're making music, do you ever think about surfing? And when you're surfing, are you ever thinking about music?
Definitely. The ocean is actually the only place where I feel like I have silence.
Right.
So there's moments where you're just sitting out there and you're waiting for the wave, or you just like anything, you're just sitting there and there's nothing you can do. Waves, they come and they go. Mm-hmm. You can't make them happen.
Yeah. Right.
So and in those moments you inevitably it's just I try to concentrate mostly in just being in the right place at the right time.
Right.
So I'm in position to catch the wave, but I end up starting to think about compositions and sometimes I'll just work out a whole piece in my head.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
while I'm out
awesome.
There and I'll get to my car after a session, I'll get in my car. I'll go on my cell phone, and start kind of
singing something into it.
Yeah, either it's like a whole like a rhythmic thing, or
you're like string one.
yeah. I mean, it's but yeah. Sometimes it does happen that way. And when I'm in the studio, I feel like it's just like when you ride a wave, you're on it, and it moves in time, just like
right.
music does.
Yeah.
Like music,
yeah.
It moves in time. And a wave moves in time. You can't just, like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, if you're playing with a band, you can't just, like, okay, I'm going to stop here and figure out what... No.
No.
It just goes.
You have to go, and it's timing that you're just kind of, like, ebb and flow.
Right.
You're using those...
Exactly, which is why people ask me a lot about, like, why do you still play so many gigs? And for me, it's that thing of being in the moment that really keeps me sharp in terms of staying in the moment when I'm working in the studio by myself.
Right.
And I don't get stuck too much in like thinking about, okay, vertically and just keep going horizontally and just know that when I'm playing with other musicians and I'm interacting with them, that is just being in the moment.
Yeah.
And riding that wave of creativity. Whereas when I'm composing, it's that same way that I'm trying to ride and just keep going and not focus on the just any single moment.
That was like something composed. I got chills, man.
This is why I've been waiting so long to have you on the show, because I'm like, this guy's like one of the most fascinating people. Like, really. I want to go way back. Let's go way back. Ariel, you're from Israel originally, right?
Correct.
So tell me how you got into music. What was the song or the thing, or was it family or the influences that got you first into music, and what did you start with?
I first started when I was, I think, 6 years old. My dad is a very, very talented musician who never got to pursue it because his uncle would beat the shit out of him.
No music for you!
Yes, he was like, you're going to be an architect or a doctor, you know? Like, yeah, typical right. Jewish parent. And he, but he had a perfect pitch, and he would play everything by ear. He would transcribe... Still does transcribe big band arrangements by ear, having no clue what he's playing.
That's
just
crazy.
That is nuts.
It is pretty crazy. So one time, he just sat me on his lap while he was playing the keyboards, and I just started repeating him. So immediately figured, okay,
this kid's got it.
This kid's got some talent. And then I started piano lessons, which I was getting good at, but my teachers were not. Which is a lot of problem with teachers these days. They just try to impose their will,
right?
On, especially with kids. You really have to know how to.
There's no creative.
Cater to their a little bit more to their needs and try instead of just trying to impose like your method on them. Exactly. So, and I was not disciplined in practicing because of that. Then one day, my brother for Purim, which is like the Israeli Halloween, me and my friend. Dressed as a James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett from Metallica.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And our brothers, they built us these guitars from cardboard and fishing string. Those were like the strings.
Wow.
So I actually started transcribing like Iron Maiden and Def Leppard on that freaking thing. Yeah, so I don't know. I really started really learning songs on cardboard and fishing strings, and then my brother came into my room and he saw that, and he was like, somewhat
shocked.
You
need a guitar.
Yeah, so he gave me his guitar. So I was really into it. I just sat by the piano and I figured out the notes, open strings, because I knew music notation,
right.
And I started teaching myself guitar.
That is, wow. You know what? As long as I've known this guy, I've never known that. This is why I love doing interviews.
Totally.
Because I learn more about the people in such a short amount of time. I've never heard you tell me that story.
And I've never heard of a Israel Halloween before either. That's how lost I am.
I have, but I've never heard of a cardboard guitar no, with a string being an influence for a guitarist. That's nuts.
Crazy.
And whoever made that for you, they had to have made it so well that... you could be able to move up and down.
Yeah,
you know,
well, it had six strings on it, but zero sustain, because those things were just like... But I learned pour some sugar on me on that thing.
What?
I learned, like... Yeah, I learned some Iron Maiden, like, Power Slave.
That is crazy.
And Metallica songs, and yeah.
So when did you pick up guitar?
I was about 10.
Okay.
And... yeah, when I got into the guitar, I suddenly became really disciplined.
Right.
And I started practicing a lot really quickly, and I started getting fast pretty quickly. And then I was first starting to, I was learning, you know, Metallica, Iron Man, all the rock, metal stuff, Megadeth. And I was actually into sequencing back in the day, too. My dad gave me, like, a drum machine.
That's nuts.
And I had, like, a 4-track. that I record like
I used to use those.
Yeah,
they were awesome.
Yeah, like I have a top, was a Tascam.
That's what I had too,
yeah,
man.
Right,
old
exactly.
School. Was it blue?
It was a 4-track. Yeah, it was,
yeah. Mine was blue, and
yeah.
Man, it's
with the
so old school.
Yeah, exactly. So I learned how to sequence on that thing. So yeah, I would program a whole song, the drum part, record the bass, record the rhythm guitars. and then I would just wail on guitar solos for like, you know.
That's awesome.
And so I was already into sequencing when I was really
young. What was the first guitar solo that you were like, I have to learn this?
I think it was Metallica Master of Puppets.
Nice.
Probably.
Good choice. Good choice.
Yeah. Me and my friend, actually, at the time, who's today one of the most world-renowned classical guitar players, Tal Hurwitz, we used to practice together quite a bit. We would just spend hours in the basement just shedding Nuno Bettencourt and Steve Vai.
I did a show with him a long time ago.
Oh, really?
With Population One, where he did the solo project?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So Nuno is actually a huge influence on my playing, because his playing comes from rhythm.
Right.
And for me, rhythm is the most important thing.
Yeah.
That's, like, paramount to anything. And Nuno's always been groove first, and even his solos are all about rhythm. And
dude, he's virtuoso too.
Yeah,
and he's just and so tasteful with what he plays.
Yeah, tone, everything. So that was a great influence. I actually still have his Washburn N4.
Wow,
like from '94, which is like, yeah, it's like a vintage.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So no one told you that you had to be a doctor or a lawyer or something. You were open.
Good question. I was just about to ask him that.
You were open to play music.
You see, so because. Because my dad did not receive any support. He was very supportive, and so was my mom. They both, I was very lucky to have extremely supportive parents.
Your mom is so sweet, too. I remember during a session she came and hung out with us, bought us pizza.
Oh,
she was
nice.
So awesome.
Pizza's always good.
That's the way to win over a musician,
of
right
course.
There.
Yeah, my mom's cool. She likes to, you know, come to gigs, and she'll stay out there till like 2 in the morning, and she's been instrumental to... my success and my dad as well, because he obviously I got the musical talent from him, but also he would give me huge record collections, like here's 45 records of Bill Evans.
Wow.
Here's 50 records of Wes Montgomery.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He had this
jazz legends, total jazz legends.
When I was about 14 or 15, I started getting into jazz.
Okay.
And yeah, luckily my dad had a few thousand records of everything from like Miles Davis, Coltrane, Parker.
That's crazy. Had? No longer has?
Oh, no, he does.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
They're now in Ario's closet.
And especially now.
Well, actually,
vinyl is so big right now.
A lot of them,
he stole them.
A lot of them are, yeah. Definitely.
So then you decided to attend the Berklee College of Music in Boston, which is like one of the best music schools in the country, if not the world. And you had to leave your family. That must have been a crazy experience, just to know that you're like, all right, I'm going to pursue this thing, go full-fledged into it.
You know what? It's. I think about this quite often. I never even considered not doing music. I don't think it ever even occurred to me that I'm able to do anything else.
Right.
I probably am, but I think since I was 12, I kind of knew like
this is it.
Wow.
Like, once I have a real guitar, I pass this fish line.
Like, I didn't know what it was, but I figured like, okay, and Berklee in specific actually is very well known in Israel.
Right.
And the specific high school I went to, Talma Elin, which is a very famous performing arts high school in Tel Aviv, they actually teach with the Berklee books.
Oh, wow.
Like harmony.
So the curriculum's there, like all the theory.
Ear training, arranging, jazz arranging.
Dude, that's crazy you got that in high school.
Yeah,
in
no
high
kidding.
School.
That put you ahead of the game, because that was a whole... When I went to music school, I had none of that. I'd done some crazy stuff before, but you're not taught that.
No, in my high school, we were lucky we finally got a music instructor. Like, we had, like, one person for a while that we just played, like, xylophones, you know, like, and then finally we got, like, a real band.
They're like, Josh, quit playing the recorder.
I never played anything, unfortunately. I was too busy getting in trouble.
It was great, because one of my teachers there was actually, I think, most of the teachers in my high school for the music program, they were Berklee alumni. So
oh, wow.
they were instrumental in implementing that
program. So they're like, yeah, you gotta go to Berkeley. You gotta go to Berkeley.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's kind of... I didn't know about other schools like USC or UCLA. I didn't even know those places exist. All I heard was Berkeley. And a lot of very successful musicians actually attended as well. Guys like Avishai Cohen and
he's insane, dude. He's... It's crazy you went to school with him.
Yeah, I mean... there's so many people from my high school that have graduated, become incredible, like successful jazz musicians, actually.
Wow.
And being a professional, that's
one of the toughest.
To be a successful jazz musician, like...
you have to be pretty much the most badass musician around.
Exactly.
Mm. And I think jazz musicians, like, I think personally, like having gone from classical to jazz and rock and blues and all that stuff... I think jazz musicians are seriously the most talented musicians because they can literally play any style and make it sound great. But it comes back to what you're saying, like being in the moment. Like they compose on the spot.
I believe
That's awesome. That's amazing.
I believe that having a good jazz background, I would say even foundation, is paramount to definitely players. Like, I can easily discern a player that has studied jazz for a good amount of time. Like, because what it really develops is listening skills.
The ear.
When you play in a jazz setting, you really have to constantly listen to the musicians around you and react to what they're doing. And you're not just concentrating about like, just playing your part or...
Like it's like improv for music almost.
Yeah. It is exactly.
It's exactly what it is.
That is exactly what it is. So it teaches you to converse with the musicians around you and really kind of ride that wave, which really
pun
helps.
Intended. Right. Nice work.
Bringing it back to the beginning.
He's like, I'm going to throw some surfing.
There's going to be a lot of
tying it back.
It's going to be all over the place. Sorry.
Awesome. I love it. Well, I want to get to some of your music real quick, and we'll talk about how you got into composing and all that. What do you want to play us first?
You know what? Let's play. Do you have Army of One?
Josh?
No.
Yeah, you do. It's up there on the left. Look up on the left. You should have it up on the left.
I can name the things I have. I have a Mantron out. What's that?
A Mantron. Play at 800 Street.
Okay, that one I got.
Okay, let's play.
Here we go. Play that. Sorry.
Thank you.
Very nice. Very nice. Beautiful. All right. There are some serious jazz legends on this track. Aria, why don't you just go through the list of the people that are playing on this record?
So, this is from Lee Ritenour's record, Rhythm Sessions. Came out a couple years ago, which I produced most of the tracks on. I did all the synth programming, played guitar, and a bunch of other stuff. And this specific track is originally composed by EST Trio, which is a Bjorn Svensson trio.
God bless
from,
you.
Yeah, from amazing trio, piano trio from Europe. So the interesting thing about this track and how this whole thing kind of came about is I used to play with this Persian corporate
band. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I worked with this band for about 5 years, and we used to have a string section we would play, and one of the string players, Reiko, she once came up to me, hey, listen, you know Lee Ritenour? I was like, yeah, of course I know. I know him. He's an amazing player and this and that. She's like, well, his son wants to go to Berkeley, and he's looking for somebody to prep his son for all the auditions. Now they do much more rigorous testing for...
Did you tell him just to go to Israel?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well played, Josh. Well played.
Done, well done, yeah. Exactly. So I was like, cool, awesome. So she set me up with an interview with Lee. So I went to his studio, and we ended up just talking for about 3 hours about guitars and music, and
wow.
we really connected. So he hired me to teach his son, but at the same time he asked me, hey man, I'm looking to get some charts done for a couple of tunes. You think you'd be able to do it? Sure. So that's the first one he sent me was this song to transcribe and get him a chart for it. And then he asked me, well, I know you produce tracks as well. Do you want to try and see if you can and produce a track for
me?
Sure. Sure, I'll do that. So I produced the track. Well, I mocked up the drums, bass, guitars. All those guitars that you hear on the track, most of them are actually from the original demo, which I did a lot of textural stuff and really kind of lots of interesting synth textures and really kind of different approach.
Right.
And he heard it, and he really loved it, and he ended up hiring me to do almost all the other tracks on that album.
He hired me to play every instrument on every track.
Well, and it was really awesome because then I ended up not being able to really teach his son anymore because I didn't have time.
Right. You're like, hey kid, yeah. Just start practicing.
Yeah, go get me a coffee.
And now actually his son is playing drums on that last track that we played, Wesley. He's a great drummer too.
I'm sure his son got it.
Right, did he get into Berkeley or what?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he got it.
He got it, yeah. So, but it was, the experience still was unbelievable because I got to work with guys like Dave Grusin, Stanley Jordan, Dave Weckl, Vinny Colaiuta, Chick Corea.
That's crazy. Those are like all stars in my book of all like my favorite. Like Vinny Colaiuta, I just saw play with Sting and Peter Gabriel. Christian McBride's one of my favorite bass players.
Right, that's Christian McBride on that specific last track that we heard. It was amazing just to see how Lee picked the perfect people. Kind of cast, almost like a casting director,
right.
For
mm-hmm.
each track. Like there was, I would say there was a different rhythm section for each three songs, and he knew exactly which people to have on each track, like that would make it sound the best. Like,
and what's cool is like you're playing, you're able to like compose parts with this all-star cast, you know, at your disposal, which is like pretty much the dream as a jazz musician coming out of Berkeley and Israel as well. Like, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm going to play it cool, but inside you must have been doing backflips.
Yeah, it was.
Let's be honest.
It was just amazing to see, you know, these guys doing takes on my loops and my stuff and just killing it. So it was definitely one of those moments where you feel like you're doing something right.
Right. That's amazing.
That's awesome.
So, Ariel, you've been doing a lot of composing.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually hired Ariel myself to do, like, I play guitar, but this guy's like a guitar wizard. So whenever I have somebody that's like, hey, can you produce my record? I'm like, yeah, this guy's going to play guitar. My band's going to play drums and bass. And, you know, I'm going to hire other people, like horns or whatever.
Nice.
But this guy's always like, and it's great because I can always, like, work out ideas with him. And we always see eye to eye. I could be like, yo, what are you thinking on this? And he'll just, like.
These are on your albums?
These are on records that I produce of other, like, songwriting students or other people. And, like, he always pulls out the best idea, like, on the first or second take. It's insane. And, like, what I love about your work ethic, I'm going to give you mad props. He's like, I gotta swallow all these compliments. But, no, like, you know, you work with a lot of musicians, but this guy's work ethic is crazy. Like, he'll give it to you right on the first take, but he'll give you four other takes just to be like, just in case if you need these other ones, I mean, I just want to do this for myself because I love making it right. You know, so it's so fun to
I mean, the dude's working while he's on a surfboard.
I know. That's what I mean. He's probably composing half these parts. Like,
you know, that's – it brings – you know, that's it. I mean, the point itself that you're making is just a certain type of mentality that I believe is crucial to succeeding.
Love the work.
In any aspect of this industry is that you never know who's listening, who knows who. Like, how the hell would I know that Reiko knows Lee Ritenour and – she would connect me with him, and I would end up working with all these people that led me to other jobs as well.
Yep.
But she knew that I really knew how to score and arrange and do tracks.
And the work. And the work ethic. Let's be honest.
Yeah, and that's why she recommended me.
I mean,
well done.
Boom. Boom. Is there a boom? We don't have a boom?
Damn, that was a good shot. Like, you never know who's listening. So I don't care where I'm playing,
right,
who I'm recording for. This is going to be my best no matter what, because it's you never know who's going to listen, and it's just got to sound good to me. If I'm playing a freaking bar mitzvah or a wedding, I need to sound good to myself. Yeah. I don't care what the other people think in the crowd.
No, and it's so awesome. Like, he sat in with us at House of Blues, and, like, he was bringing in pedals for one song. I'm like, I love you, dude. You really get it, man. Like, you're a gearhead like me. You know, it's awesome. So he's one of the best musicians I know. Let's talk about your compositions real quick. Yeah. I want to get to your music, too. What do you want to play us next? Set up this next composition for us.
Yeah, let's... So the next thing we're going to hear is music from Star Wars Commander, which is all orchestral compositions.
Maybe we should answer this phone call first.
Oh, we have a caller.
Oh, do we?
We do have a caller. Who is it? Hello, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, is this Wake Up Hollywood?
This is Wake Up Hollywood. Who am I speaking to?
This is Adam Gus.
Adam Gus! We know that name!
El Gusto!
El Gusto, do you have a question, though?
Yeah, I have a question. I have a question about, you know, it's great that you have all the great work ethic skills and all this talent and music and everything, but I feel like you're neglecting an important art form you possess. Kind of leaving it by the wayside. Your ability to 80s dance. It's really kind of been bumming me out. I haven't seen it lately.
I even made a comment during one of the other tracks. I'm like, dude, I did one of his little 80s dance moves. Adam, that was a great question. Ariel, go ahead and take this
one.
Well,
it's, I guess, guys, people who do know me know I love to dance. It's not a big secret. I'm a raver at heart. I am many, many things, and raver is one of them. I like clubbing, outdoor raves on the occasion.
So, Adam, like, not only are you a fan of his guitar playing and piano playing and scoring, but also his 80s dance moves.
Yeah, well, so my question is, I know that none of the listeners can see it, but the listeners can get a picture for it by Nikki's reaction to it. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind like giving Nikki a little something to react to in the 80s dance genre. Oh.
You've been put to the test, dude. Oh.
Wow.
I see Ariel sweating. I've never seen him sweat before, but he's sweating right now.
I love you, dude.
Oh, dude. I wanted to live vicariously through Nikki's laughter about it. That's okay.
I live vicariously through you.
Just a thought of it, you can hear Nikki laughing his ass off. So.
Because I know the way he dances, and it is awesome. You should be making YouTube videos on how you interpret music today.
That's actually in the works as we speak. No, I'm serious, man. I am working on a pretty crazy kind of video for my website. I'm putting like a good amount of money into it. It's going to be high production value, and it's definitely going to include some dancers.
Yes. Nice.
No. But we want you dancing.
Right, well, don't give it away then. Don't give it away.
That's going to be the least of it. Trust me.
Adam,
I have you covered. Don't
Adam told me ahead
me.
Of time. He's like, "I've got a good question. Can I call in?" And it's like, "Absolutely."
That was a good one.
Well, Adam, there would be sessions where if it was a good enough take, he would 80s dance, and that would inspire me to like play my absolute best, just knowing it was possibly going to get to see him react.
Right. Dude, it's the hands excited. In the air. That's my favorite one when he does the hands in the air.
Oh, yeah, I get excited. I get really happy when we get a good take in. Yeah.
Adam, you are a phenomenal drummer, and we are so happy to have you ask a very important 80s dance move question. So thanks for joining us.
So come to three clubs in Hollywood, a dangerous plane when you're done.
So yowza.
Maybe I'll see you here.
Cool.
Awesome, Adam.
I'll hit you up.
All right. Yeah, I'll be listening. Enjoy the show. Thanks, Ariel.
Word.
All right, let's get to this track now. Yeah. What were you going to play us?
So this is music from Star Wars Commander, which is one of the games I work on for Disney. And obviously the music had to sound very much John Williams.
Right.
And obviously there's many challenges to that, as John Williams is one of the greatest composers 20th century.
And I heard George Lucas has been hearing your work too.
Well, it's not specifically George Lucas, but it's people at Lucas.
Yeah, but that
approve
that counts.
Yeah,
don't ruin it.
they have to approve.
Just
my,
go with it.
Yeah, he might.
You don't have to specify. Yeah, you can just say Lucas anyway.
Yeah, just say Lucas, yeah. And we get the idea.
It would be awesome if he did, but
I'm sure he did.
The game is done by Disney, and Lucas actually approves all products.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was involved still.
Yeah, so it's they have people that approve the music at Lucas.
Okay.
So any kind of product that we do, either it's EA or Disney, whether it's a toy or a game that has any type of association with Star Wars, Lucas is it goes through them.
Lucas fellow sounds important.
And so it was definitely a daunting task, but I've studied the same composers that Williams has studied, guys like Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Stravinsky, Bartok. Those guys.
Rachmaninoff too. Come on now.
Yeah, but Rachmaninoff is not so much part of Star Wars sound. It's very more kind of modern 20th century. Less romantic.
Yeah.
There's some of that, like some of the love themes, like Princess Leia's theme, or those that have a little bit of that as well. But the music for Star Wars Commander is mostly either very kind of chill, where you're at your base, where it's low energy, which is the first part of the track, and then the second part of the track is the combat part, which is obviously much
let's
more.
Let's get to it.
Let's hear this thing.
Star Wars. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Jedi was on a battle
it was ground
awesome. Fighting yeah. the Empire, man.
These are doing the Star Wars tracks is one. It's probably the most challenging aspect of the my job at Disney.
And you've been working with them for about 2-3 years, right?
Almost 2 years now. And it's such a huge variety of musical styles that I got to produce. But this for this specific stuff, the obviously the mock-up, which you know everything here is synthesized. Oh, this is not a real orchestra. There's
and all by you.
Yeah.
As we just discussed.
He's a one-man orchestra.
That's amazing.
That's a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's expected to sound really as realistic as possible. And the level of detail that you really have to get into to pull it off is daunting. Like, actually composing the music is not hard for me at all, but it can be very, very tedious work to get the mock-up to sound great.
And the mixes, too, because you're, like, working with... How many instruments are on this? Probably, like, 100 and something?
Well, total? On my template, I have about 300 tracks.
Oh, my God.
But
that is nuts.
Yeah, and because there's... Each instrument has many different articulations.
Right.
Like, violin one, staccato, legato, staccato, right. pizzicato, violin two, this, you know, clarinet one, two, three, legato. Hmm. It's I have to have them all organized in folders, actually,
right.
And on my...
That is nuts.
In Logic, otherwise, the template, you won't be able to see anything.
And what we were talking about, like, just a second ago, the hardest part about orchestration is knowing the keys that all these instruments can play in where it's going to work with other instruments. And if you're working with 300 instruments, all in different tunings, that's a nightmare.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's what's... Kind of, the thing that's really cool though about if you're a really good orchestrator, you don't really have to do a lot of actual mixing.
Right.
I mean, because the samples that are produced today are very realistic. They sound idiomatic in their ranges.
Right.
Like if you play an instrument that's louder, higher range, it will be louder. Usually, it used to be kind of like okay. You have to adjust the volume, but the way they sample instruments these days, it makes it like if you know what you're doing orchestration wise, you're not going to have to mess around too much with volumes of tracks as much. You really just have to know how to write to the correct ranges of
right.
those instruments,
and they all have like the right room, you know, in a mix too.
Exactly. That's probably the main thing in orchestral mockups is knowing how to use. Reverb.
But I think the hardest part with all that stuff are the themes. Like, you came up with great themes that totally match what Williams is doing
in
the movies. That's the hardest part.
Well, that's really knowing how to analyze the characteristics of the music,
right.
Which is one of the main things I have to do in Disney is because I have to write music that sounds like the composer wrote it. Like,
right.
if I'm doing
mm-hmm.
Star Wars track, boom. If I'm doing Alan Menken, like a Toy Story, so I have to do like a Randy Newman style track. There's very specific things to his sound. If I'm doing like a Inside Out track, so I have to kind of emulate Michael Giacchino. If you know, doing a Marvel thing, you know, it's Alan Silvestri or you know Tyler Bates, whatever.
Yeah, but those are all like you're like walking in the footsteps of giants, which is awesome.
What
makes you better?
It's an incredible learning experience because I really really get to. Analyze and learn these styles that have proven themselves
right.
as great music. But as I said, you need to learn how to actually analyze, be able to analyze those things. Like if I'm analyzing a John Williams piece, I have to know how to analyze the harmony, the rhythm, the orchestration
mm-hmm.
techniques,
right.
All those different things that kind of characterize his music and make it like, okay,
awesome.
You know that it's John Williams immediately, but
yeah.
when I'm writing it, I have to make it my own.
Right.
So
and still emulate all those themes. And
exactly,
sounds.
Exactly.
Well, real quick, how can people find you to get you to orchestrate their things or do their synth stuff for jazz records or play guitar? Where can people find you?
Well, I have my website, arielman.com.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
A-R-I-E-L-M-A-N-N. Sorry.
You misspelled your name, man.
Sorry. A-R-I-E-L-M-A-N-N.com. My name, .com. And I usually post new tracks on it. I'm actually in the process of updating a lot of the videos.
With some 80s dance moves.
That is one of the things that's going to be up there. But yeah, I've just done so many things over the last year and a half that I really got to start using, you know, and updating my website in that sense. I definitely have some newer tracks on there now, and I post news about new projects that I'm working on.
Well, Aria, you've been an amazing guest. What a fascinating interview. Awesome. We're going to play something else that you're going to set up real quick. What are you going to play us out?
We're going to play a track from Tron Runner, which is another game I worked on for Disney, which I ended up creating 13 tracks for, which is like an album.
Oh, wow.
Awesome.
So the original music for the game was composed by Giorgio Moroder, who's a legendary
DJ.
Yeah, and producer. He basically invented EDM.
That's right.
And he only composed 6 tracks for the game, and we ended up with more than 40 levels of gameplay. So we originally were commissioned to do remixes of his music. So we got sent his stems, and we could do with him whatever we wanted, as long as we were in the same BPM. And I ended up just really taking maybe a little snippet of it and just going on a completely different tangent.
That's awesome.
And ended up kind of creating this style, which I called kind of cyberpunk.
Nice.
Let's do it. Let's hear it. I'm ready. Josh Ledoux and Nikki Carulla.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys next week. Josh, thanks for being on board. Ariel, you too, man.
Yeah.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.